Good evening. Scott's away, and that's given an opportunity for one of us men to speak. And so tonight, I'm going to take that opportunity so I can figure out all this stuff. Tonight's topic is alliances. I've been thinking about this for a while and kind of had thoughts in my head, but I haven't really put things down to be able to work on a lesson for several weeks until several weeks ago. But when you think about it, and I'm going to bring up some examples in the Bible, there are a lot of alliances that we find in the Bible. Alliance, if you look it up in the dictionary, is a treaty between nations or individuals. It's a relationship in which people agree to work together. It's a bond or connection between families, states, parties, or individuals. It's an association to further the common interests of the members. A couple of synonyms: accord, treaty, compact, convention, covenant, or pact. And we see the word accord in the Bible. We see treaty. We see covenants. Those three words we often see in the Bible. And so they're a synonym of alliance. We're going to start in 1 Kings chapter 3. If you did a word search for the word alliance, you'd find 1 Kings chapter 3 talks about Solomon making an alliance. It says in chapter 3, verse 1, "Now Solomon made a treaty," and in the New American Standard, the ESV, it says, "made an alliance with Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and married Pharaoh's daughter. Then he brought her to the city of David until he had finished building his own house in the house of the Lord and the wall all around Jerusalem." Pharaoh married her for political reasons, but it was an alliance with Egypt. And that, of course, we know from earlier times, was a no-no according to God's word. If you flip back to Deuteronomy chapter 7, in verses 1 to 4, these are words that from the Lord that Moses tells the people. "When the Lord your God brings you into the land which you go to possess and has cast out many nations before you, the Hittites and the Girgashites and the Amorites and the Canaanites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than you, and when the Lord your God delivers them over to you, you shall conquer them and utterly destroy them. You shall make no covenant with them or show mercy to them. You shall not, nor shall you make marriages with them. You shall not give your daughter to their son, nor take their daughter for your son. For they will turn away your sons, they will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods. So the anger of the Lord will be aroused against you and destroy you suddenly." Certainly, Solomon knew that. Now, this is talking about when the Israelites were going to come into the nation, but still the principle is here in verse 4 that God tells them they're not to marry foreign wives because they're going to turn their hearts away. And so, Solomon makes this alliance anyway. And so that was obviously a start of his downfall. And, of course, he marries many foreign women. I'm not watching what I'm doing. All right. I fixed it, but I didn't fix it. Chapter 5. 1 Kings chapter 5, verse 1. Solomon makes another alliance with Hiram, king of Tyre. We'll read verses 1 through 12. "Now Hiram, king of Tyre, sent his servants to Solomon because he heard that they had anointed him king in the place of his father, for Hiram had always loved David. Then Solomon sent to Hiram, saying, 'You know how my father David could not build a house for the name of the Lord his God because of the wars which were fought against him on every side. until the Lord put his foes under the soles of his feet. But now the Lord my God has given me rest on every side, so that there is neither adversary nor evil occurrence. And behold, I propose to build a house for the name of the Lord my God, as the Lord spoke to my father David, saying, Your son, whom I will set on your throne in your place, he shall build the house for my name. Now therefore command that they cut down cedars for me from Lebanon, and my servants will be your servants, and I will pay your wages for your servants according to whatever you say. For you know there is none among us who has skill to cut timber like the Sidonians. So it was, when Hiram heard the words of Solomon, that he rejoiced greatly and said, Blessed be the Lord this day, for he has given David a wise son over his great people. Then Hiram sent to Solomon, saying, I have considered the message which you sent me, and I will do all that you desire concerning the cedar and cypress logs. My servants shall bring them down from Lebanon to the sea. I will float them in rafts by the sea to the place you indicate to me, and will have them broken apart there. Then you can take them away, and you shall fulfill my desire by giving food for my household. So Hiram gave Solomon cedar and cypress logs according to all his desire. And Solomon gave Hiram 20,000 cores of wheat as food for his household, and 20 cores of pressed oil. Thus Solomon gave to Hiram year by year. So the Lord gave Solomon wisdom as he had promised him, and there was peace between Hiram and Solomon, and the two of them made a treaty together, an alliance. The two of them worked together. It was for their mutual benefit, and it was basically a business arrangement. I'm not saying it's wrong. What they did, they helped each other out. Neither one from this seems to have drawn the other away, but they worked together. They had an alliance, is my point. And so an example of an alliance. David and Jonathan. If you remember back when the Philistines are battling against Israel, the Philistines are on one mountain, And the Israelites on another. The Valley of Elah is in between. And they sent Goliath down and harassed the Israelites and to challenge them. And David, coming to the battle to see his brothers and bring supplies, stands up and tells Saul that he'll go out and fight Goliath. So after this battle that David wins in 1 Samuel 18, we turn to 1 Samuel 18, verse 1. And so it was, when he had finished speaking to Saul, this is after the battle, and David comes and speaks with Saul. So it was, when he had finished speaking to Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. Saul took him that day and would not let him go home to his father's house anymore. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant, because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan took off the robe that was on him and gave it to David with his armor and even his sword and his bow and his belt. David and Jonathan had a common faith. That's what brought them together. They had a faith in God, and they became, you might say, they became kindred spirits or soulmates throughout the life of both Jonathan and David. Of course, and we read as we continue in chapters 18 through 31, during the life of Jonathan and David, the two of them work together and are helping each other, and particularly Jonathan helps out David. And so they have an alliance, a covenant that they have formed together through this period of time until the time of Jonathan's death, which, of course, was very upsetting to David when Jonathan died. Another alliance that we see in the Bible. Paul, on his second missionary journey, he takes Silas and Timothy. If you flip over to Acts chapter 15. We're going to start back in verse 36 of chapter 15. Then after some days, Paul said to Barnabas, Let us go back and visit our brethren in every city where we have preached the word of the Lord and see how they are doing. Now Barnabas was determined to take with him John, called Mark. But Paul insisted that they should not take him, take with them the one who had departed from them in Pamphylia and had not gone with them to the work. Then the contention became so sharp that they parted from one another. And so Barnabas took Mark and sailed to Cyprus. But Paul chose Silas and departed, being commended by the brethren to the grace of God. And he went through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the churches. Then he came to Derbe and Lystra. And behold, a certain disciple was there, named Timothy, the son of a certain Jewish woman, who believed, but his father was Greek. He was well spoken of by the brethren who were at Lystra and Iconium. Paul wanted to have him go on with him, and he took him and circumcised him because of the Jews who were in that region, for they all knew that his father was Greek. And as they went through the cities, they delivered to them decrees to keep, which were determined by the apostles and the elders at Jerusalem. So the churches were strengthened in faith and increased in number daily. That alliance continued through their second missionary journey. Timothy and Silas are accompanying Paul at various points there, and they had this alliance. They worked together. They were serving the Lord. They were teaching, and they were encouraging and edifying the people. So they had this alliance that was a good alliance. Flip over to Matthew chapter 26. Another alliance of different sort. Judas makes an alliance with the chief priests. This is just before Jesus is crucified at the starting in verse 14. It says, then one of the 12, called Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and said, what are you willing to give me if I deliver him to you? And they counted out to him 30 pieces of silver. So from that time, he sought an opportunity to betray him. Judas, he wanted the money. That was more important to him than Jesus. And so he was willing to take money and turn in or make access for the chief priests to get to Jesus. And so he made this promise to him, this alliance, and they paid him money, and he was going to get the money, and they were going to get access to Jesus. And so after Jesus shares the Last Supper with the apostles, and they go out to the Garden of Gethsemane, and we read in verse 47, and while he was still speaking, behold, Judas, one of the 12, with a great multitude with swords and clubs, came from the chief priests and the elders of the people. Now his betrayer had given them a sign, saying, whomever I kiss, he is the one, seize him. Then immediately he went up to Jesus and said, greetings, Rabbi, and kissed him. And Jesus said to him, friend, why have you come? Then they came and laid hands on Jesus and took him. A sad alliance, but alliance no less. An illustration that alliances can be good and they can also be bad. And we don't see that in the definition of an alliance, but I think when we think about it, they can go either way. Jehoshaphat. If you flip over to 1 Kings chapter 22, Jehoshaphat begins a chain of events. First Kings 22, starting in verse 41. Remember, Jehoshaphat is king in Judah, and in verse 41. I'll get to the right place here. I have to get to 1 Kings, not 2. It says, now Jehoshaphat, the son of Asa, had become king over Judah in the fourth year of Ahab, king of Israel. Jehoshaphat was 35 years old when he became king, and he reigned 25 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Azubah, the daughter of Shilhai, and he walked in all the ways of his father Asa. He did not turn aside from them, doing what was right in the eyes of the Lord. Nonetheless, the high places were not taken away, for the people offered sacrifices and burned incense on the high places. Also, Jehoshaphat made peace with the king of Israel. Now, the king of Israel at this time is Ahab. And we all know who Ahab is. If you turn to 2 Chronicles 18, starting in verse 1, Jehoshaphat had riches and honor in abundance, and by marriage he allied himself with Ahab. Now, we don't read it here. We have to go on to read it, and we'll see it in a few minutes. But Jehoshaphat doesn't, obviously marry Ahab or Ahab's wife or anything like that. But it's not Jehoshaphat's marriage. It's Jehoshaphat arranged the marriage of his son to Ahab's daughter. And we'll see that. And so the king of Judah, a good king, makes an alliance with the king of Israel, an evil king. Verse 2, after some years, Jehoshaphat went down to visit Ahab in Samaria. And Ahab killed sheep and oxen in abundance for him, and the people who were with him, and persuaded him to go up with him to Ramoth-Gilead. So Ahab, king of Israel, said to Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, "Will you go with me against Ramoth-Gilead?" And he answered him, "I am as you are, and my people as your people. We will be with you in the war." Ahab's asking Jehoshaphat to go with him to war against Ramoth-Gilead, who the Assyrians have taken. Verse 4, and Jehoshaphat said to the king of Israel, "Please inquire for the word of the Lord today." Then the king of Israel gathered the prophets together, 400 men, and said to them, "Shall we go to war against Ramoth-Gilead, or shall I refrain?" And they said to him, "Go up, for God will deliver it into the king's hand." But Jehoshaphat said, "Is there not still a prophet of the Lord here that we may inquire of him?" Now, I'm not going to read the whole story, but we know that Ahab says, "There is one, but I hate him. He never speaks anything good about me." But he consents to getting him. And so they call Micaiah, and he prophesies to Ahab, and basically his message is, "You're going to die." But Ahab ignores that, and Jehoshaphat goes with him too, goes along with it. And so they go and they war against Ramoth-Gilead. That leads to Ahab's death. And now Ahab is dead, king of Israel, and so his son becomes king in Israel. His son is Ahaziah. If you flip over to 2 Chronicles 20 and the end of the chapter, verse 35, after this, Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, allied himself with Ahaziah, king of Israel, who acted very wickedly. And he allied himself with him to make ships to go to Tarshish. And they made the ships in Ezon-Geber. But Eleazar, the son of Dodava of Mersha, prophesied against Jehoshaphat, saying, "Because you have allied yourself against Ahaziah, the Lord has destroyed your works." Then the ships were wrecked, so that they were not able to go to Tarshish. God intervened. God didn't like what Jehoshaphat was doing, that he was allying himself with Ahaziah, an evil king, and so God stopped that by destroying these ships. In 2 Chronicles chapter 21, Jehoshaphat soon dies, and so starting in verse 1, Jehoshaphat rested with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David. Then Jehoram, his son, reigned in his place. He had brothers, the son of Jehoshaphat. Azariah, Jehiel, Zechariah, Azarahu, Michael, and Shephatiah. All of these were the sons of Jehoshaphat, the king of Israel. Their father gave them great gifts of silver and gold and precious things with fortified cities in Judah. But he gave the kingdom to Jehoram because he was the firstborn. Now when Jehoram was established over the kingdom of his father, he strengthened himself and killed his brothers with the sword, and also others of the princes of Israel. Jehoram was 32 years old when he became king, and he reigned 8 years in Jerusalem. Pay attention to this next verse, verse 6. And he walked in the way of the kings of Israel, just as the house of Ahab had done, For he had the daughter of Ahab as a wife, and he did evil in the sight of the Lord. It was Ahab's daughter, Athaliah, that Jehoram married. So now Ahab, the who was the king in Israel, now his daughter, who was in the northern tribe, is now in Judah, the wife of Jehoram, and Jehoram's father, Jehoshaphat, had been a good king, but now here we find Jehoram. First thing he does after he becomes king and kind of gets his strength up, he kills his brothers. He's kind of inherited some evil from the Ahab side of the family. So Elijah comes on the scene, and Elijah sends him a letter. Verse 12. And a letter came to him from Elijah the prophet, saying, "Thus says the Lord God of your father David, because you have not walked in the ways of Jehoshaphat your father, and in the ways of Asa, king of Judah, but you have walked in the way of the kings of Israel, and have made Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem to play the harlot like the harlotry of the house of Ahab, and also have killed your brothers, those of your father's household, who were better than yourself, behold, the Lord will strike your people with a serious affliction, your children, your wives, and all your possessions, and you will become very sick with a disease in your intestines until your intestines come out by reason of the sickness, day by day." God intervenes and tells Jehoram he's wicked and he's going to pay for it. His family's going to pay for it. And so, in verse 20, he was 32 years old when he became king. He reigned in Jerusalem 8 years, and to no one's sorrow departed. However, they buried him in the city of David, but not in the tombs of the king. No one had any respect for Jehoram because of his evil heart and his evil doings. And so, if we think about it, Jehoshaphat made that alliance with Ahab through the marriage, and now Jehoram, whose wife is Athaliah, has made this influence and influenced him, and so he's done some wicked things. But the story continues. Second Chronicles chapter, I guess we've already read that. In chapter 22, it says, "Then the inhabitants of Jerusalem made Ahaziah, his youngest son, king in his place, for raiders who came with the Arabians into the camp had killed all the older sons." Remember, Jehoram is now dead. Ahaziah is his son. But the rest of Jehoram's brother or sons have been killed. And that's what Elijah had prophesied about. But Ahaziah had not been killed. So continuing on. So Ahaziah, the son of Jehoram, king of Judah, reigned. Ahaziah was 42 years old when he became king, and he reigned for 1 year in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Athaliah, the granddaughter of Omri. He also walked in the ways of the house of Ahab, for his mother counseled him to do wickedly. Therefore he did evil in the sight of the Lord, like the house of Ahab, for they were his counselors after the death of his father to his destruction. Verse 5, he also walked in their counsel and went with Jehoram, the son of Ahab, king of Israel, to make war against Hazael, king of Syria, at Ramoth-Gilead, and the Syrians wounded Jehoram. So what seems to have started out as a little bit of a problem continues on as time goes on. And now if we take a look one more step in verse 10, chapter 22, verse 10. "Now when Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah, saw that her son was dead, she arose and destroyed all the royal heirs of the house of Judah." Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah, now kills all these royal heirs, but she misses one. Verse 11, "But Jehoshabeth, the daughter of the king, took Joash, the son of Ahaziah, and stole him away among the king's sons who were being murdered, and put him with his nurse in a bedroom. So Jehoshabeth, the daughter of King Jehoram, the wife of Jehoiada, the priest, for she was the sister of Ahaziah, hid him from Athaliah so that she did not kill him. And he was hidden with them in the house of God for 6 years, while Athaliah reigned over the land. Athaliah, again, is Ahab's daughter. She's evil. She kills all these grandkids, and she's a pretty wicked woman. The story continues, and we won't go on with the rest of that story. But you can see from what's happened is Jehoshaphat started this by having an alliance with Ahab, an evil person, and it just snowballed. And so there was an influence there that we see by this alliance. It kept on going, and a lot of people were murdered, and a lot of evil things happened, and they obviously, the biggest thing is they weren't following the Lord. There's a lot of things in Proverbs that talk about associations, what we might, you know, we may use the word alliance or association. We'll look at some of those. If you turn to Proverbs chapter 1, these are things that we can think about and are applications for ourselves. Chapter 1, verses starting in verse 10, says, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, 'Come with us,' let us lie in wait and to shed blood. Let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol and whole like those who go down to the pit. We shall find all kinds of precious possessions. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast in your lot among us, and let us all have one purse." There's a lot of wisdom there in this writing, and a warning for us in it, how we are to deal with sinners and not to become bound or aligned with them. Chapter 4, starting in verse 14 and 15, says, "Do not enter the path of the wicked, and do not walk in the way of evil. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn away from it and pass on." Chapter 9, verse 6. "Forsake foolishness and live, and go in the way of understanding." And 13, verse 20. "He who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed." 19, verse 27. "The sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination. How much more when he brings it with wicked intent?" These are all things, good things to think about in our relations with other people, in relations to joining wicked people. Chapter 22, starting in verse 24. "Make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man do not go, lest you learn his ways and set a snare for your soul." In chapter 24, verse 1, "Do not be envious of evil men, nor desire to be with them. For their heart devises violence, and their lips talk of troublemaking." And the last verse is chapter 25, verse 5. "Take away the wicked from before the king, and his throne will be established in righteousness." That would have been handy for Jehoshaphat and a bunch of others to keep in mind. But more importantly, those are the kind of things we need to keep in mind as we live on this earth to stay away from evil and to, when we see it, We don't form an alliance with it. We don't form a union or get involved in it. Alliances are not just something we find in the Bible. We too form alliances. How do we form alliances? Well, we might form alliances with our classmates. We get, you know, friends with people. We associate with them. We get to be good buddies with people. Co-workers, same thing. We can form alliances with co-workers. You know, maybe not, maybe in work, but maybe after work. People get together with, you know, through friends at work that might have a bowling team or various activities. We need to be careful what activities we get involved in or get drawn into. It might start out as something that seems fun and interesting, but we might find that we get involved and it's not for good. There we form alliances with relatives. Maybe we've got relatives that are not serving God and they're going to draw us away. You know, neighbors, business partners. If we had a business or we were in business with somebody and they're not honest, we can form the alliance because we're a business partner, and yet we get ourselves in trouble because they're not being honest or they're in their dealings, and now we're a part of it, and so that can obviously be a big problem. Other Christians can be form alliances with. Hopefully, that those alliances are good alliances. People form online alliances, so it's not really with somebody sitting or you see, but if you blog or if you online game, you form that bond between some people. You start following people, maybe. We have to be careful the kind of people that we follow or we involved with. Our spouse in marriage is obviously an alliance that we form. And so for young people who aren't married, that's something very important to think about, is the alliance that we're going to form. But before we are married, you know, we need to be thinking about that, because when we're married, it's too late. We read Deuteronomy chapter 7, verses 1 to 4, God talking about the Israelites not forming or marrying foreign wives. Well, if we as people, young people, if we start associating, get a friendship with someone, we're attracted to them, and they're not a Christian, they are an atheist, if they just are not interested in hearing about God, and they're just very closed-minded and cold, hard-hearted, we need to be weary of that and realize that this is probably going to be a problem. And so I think some of the older members in the congregation here could probably talk to you about people that we've seen in the congregation or that they know of that have been in a marriage that was not a wholesome marriage because their wife or their husband was not a Christian. Maybe one of them's a Christian and the other one decides to be or is a Jehovah's Witness or some other religion that's just opposed. And that will cause lifelong agony for both people. And, you know, some people will come to mind in my mind that I've seen, and it just makes a very difficult situation. So before you make an alliance, a promise to a covenant to marry someone, those are things to think about, that it will lead to, you know, a lifelong, could be a lifelong tragedy if the relationship is not with the Lord. So alliances can be for evil purposes. We saw some people that had evil purposes. The alliance with Jehoshaphat, with Ahab, and with Ahaziah, and Jehoram, Athaliah. They good examples. Judas making an alliance with the chief priests. They can be ungodly, they can be destructive, and they can have negative influences and consequences that are long-lasting. So those kind of alliances or unions, we need to be fleeing from. Alliances, though, can be good. We saw examples of that. They can be godly, they can be encouraging, they can be mutually beneficial. And so we have to be looking for those kind of relationships and avoiding the bad ones. The other day I was reading an article on the internet, and there's a trials going on in Germany that there is a 94-year-old man who was an SS guard at Auschwitz. He's on trial for the crimes of the Holocaust. He was a guard at Auschwitz. He didn't apparently kill anybody, but he is accused of being involved in the death of 170,000 people. And you know, he's got, you know, who knows, you know, he may have days or weeks or maybe a few years left in his life. But this man, it's very sad that he is being prosecuted for something that he was in the military and he was guard. He saw what was happening, and yet he said nothing, he did nothing, he just went along with it. He had an alliance with the army, with the Nazi SS, and so he was a criminal. Now, how they judge that, I don't know, but that is a very sad alliance that now he's coming to reality with. And I'm sure if he has any kind of heart, you know, he has dealt with this through his life. And if he doesn't, you know, he's certainly dealing with it now. It's just a very sad situation. We hopefully will never be in that kind of a situation, but, you know, it does point out that we can be in an alliance, that we are just an associate, we are a sort of accomplice to something, because we haven't said no, we haven't walked away from a relationship. We've just been, you know, either maybe a bystander, not a bystander, but part of it, but not an active part. It could lead to serious problems. So we can have a, you know, a very active alliance. We can have one that's maybe not as active, but we're still involved. We need to be careful of that kind of thing. I haven't mentioned in this lesson the alliance that's most important, the alliance with God, the alliance with Jesus Christ. That is the alliance that we need to be making at the top of our list every day. And if you, tonight, if you're here and you don't have an alliance with Jesus Christ, this is an opportunity that you can take to be baptized and to confess that Jesus Christ is your Savior and your Lord, and you can be baptized and to become a Christian and serve Him and be obedient to the Word. So if you are in need of doing that, we can take that opportunity tonight. And if there's anybody here tonight that needs the prayers of the congregation for sins that they have committed that are of public nature, and you want prayers of the congregation, you're welcome to come forward as we stand and sing the invitation song.